This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Lindsay Clancy murder trial is 3 weeks into testimony at Plymouth Superior Court. The prosecution has called more than 60 witnesses. The problem is that some of the most damaging testimony the jury has heard actually came from the Commonwealth, from the actual DA themselves, from the prosecution. Don't ask me why, but it seems to be how things are playing out. Someone who has now been in the courtroom for this last week to give us a perspective on everything we've been discussing here in a way that only Bob can. And not just because he's Bob, but because he's been in the actual room. And when you're in the room, it's a little different than just being there with cameras. Bob Mata of Defense Diaries with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. All right, let's dive into it because Bob's got to get on a boat because he's going to Cheers for lunch.
They always know your name as well.
They're always glad you came.
They do. They do. So the prosecution called 5 mental health professionals this week. Lindsay's psychiatrist, 2 psychiatric nurse practitioners, a counselor. Every one of them described a woman begging for help, switching medications, losing sleep for days. So all the people like, I'm waiting to hear the evidence from the medical professionals. Well, there you fucking go. It's been there all week. I can't help if you're not absorbing it. All Commonwealth witnesses. So who is actually building the insanity defense here? Because it feels like the Commonwealth is doing pretty good at building the defense. They're saying she didn't have. Bob, what was it like in there?
Well, I mean, if I want to work backwards, yesterday when they decided to sandwich the autopsies in the beginning of the case and then stick an autopsy or two towards the end of their case.
Yeah.
And you get the intended result from the Commonwealth, which is Lindsay Clancy just evaporating into a puddle, inconsolable, can't control her side. I'm sitting 10 feet away from her.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in the same row across the aisle where the media sits that her parents are sitting, and they're sobbing. And if I'm to work my way back from that, it's like you said, there's just nothing like sitting in the courtroom, you know, and it's interesting to be an observer as opposed to being on the other side of the bar and arguing the case. But man, as far as the Commonwealth's case, I can't agree with you more, T. I mean, you're hearing the story from the Commonwealth's witnesses. They're asking flat out. Reddington asked Tufts flat out. She wasn't doctor shopping. No, she wasn't. She wasn't pill seeking. No, she was. This is coming from their witnesses, mm-hmm. based on their evaluations, yeah. as shitty as they were, you know, but what becomes clear, what became clear to me is how she ended up with these 4 different healthcare providers.
Yeah.
You know, it made sense when we learned that she was going to Tufts and then she's like, you know what? I don't know that she's really doing much for me. I'm going to go over to this other facility at the behest of her mother-in-law,
yeah.
Patrick's mother, who's a labor and delivery nurse, who obviously had a relationship with NP nurse practitioner Julie Paul, yeah. who was fabulous.
Could have seen.
I mean, I realize she's named in the complaint, but my estimation of her as a witness is that had she been able to remain on,
yeah,
we would not be here right now.
So yeah. evident. That was so clearly evident because you saw, you know, especially coming in after Tufts, you saw the depth of field difference between apples and oranges. I mean, it wasn't even a fruit group. It was like going from apples to tomatoes or something. It was so vastly different between those. The vesting that she had as a nurse practitioner, a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and coming from labor and delivery, with taking a text on the weekend, taking a phone call on the weekend, and granted, you know, I know a lot of people think you need to have this work-life balance, but there's professions and there's jobs, and she took this as a profession. She was all in. When you have someone in crisis like that, all her years of reps, you know, and then they had a consulting group there as well. You know, Tufts didn't consult on this with anyone. It was just startling. So, Bob, we're seeing the effect. I'm watching. I was looking for you all week in the audience there. What I know what we're feeling at home, which is traumatic. We're seeing her fall apart. We're seeing the redirects that people are doing onto Patrick. And I think just because of his affect was different, and also because people are believing it couldn't possibly be her. Look at her. It couldn't possibly. So you got to pin it somewhere else. That's the effect coming through the camera. What's the jury doing? What do you feel in that courtroom from the jury? How are they seeing this, you think?
So in the debacle day, which was not yesterday, but the day prior, I mean, the jury was obviously feeling it. There was one juror in particular, and I've seen, like, my wife is like, you have to be telling the people what the jury's doing. And I'm like, well, honey, you know as well as I do that I can't read minds, and neither can you, and I've never met a lawyer that can. What are they thinking? I have no idea. If, you know, I give body language the weight that it deserves, which is very little.
Part of the whole.
Right. You know, right. It's part of the collective. Are there things that people do that obviously are indicative of a feeling? Obviously. So I'm not dismissing that, but, you know, thinking that you've cracked a case and you've figured somebody out based on the body language, I just don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
I'm not besmirching anybody that believes that stuff, but, you know, good on you. But there was a woman in the second row, because what I was looking at, a lot of jurors were stealing glances at Lindsay during the breakdowns. All right. So almost the entire first row, there's two younger, I'd say the two youngest jurors, female, in that first row. You know, they would steal a 3 to 5 second glance at her as she's breaking down. There was a woman, I would say, over 50, back row, who was just staring, watching Lindsay the entire time. And you know, and dabbing her eyes. Now, what she's dabbing her eyes for could be a multitude of things, obviously. You know, it could be that she's feeling empathy for Lindsay, as I do. I put a tweet out contemporaneous to that moment going on where I said I desperately wish I could give Lindsay Clancy a hug.
Yeah, uh-huh. saw the response to that too.
Yeah, you saw the response to that. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Because if it gets the mental health conversation going, yes. I'm here.
Bob, you have empathy for people. How dare you?
And there, I think the win has already occurred. I was talking to Todd and Tony before you got on, Bob. You know, this has been such an attention draw for so many reasons. And there is no justice for these children. She's right. going to be behind bars, either locked to a bed or in general pot for the rest of her life. She just wants to die. And we all agree with the fact that she killed her kids. It looks as if she premeditated it. The only argument is, was she psychotic during the premeditation or not? And that's what these experts, especially on defense, are going to say and claim. And when you look at those, when you look at her behavior in the courtroom, when you look at the testimony of anyone, the only thing that could justify someone who had a life arc of hers for that is a psychotic break. I've never even seen one this profound. And so we're not even arguing on any of the facts. It just comes down to, will the jury believe she's psychotic or not? Was she in that state? Which is completely, as we're going to find when Reddington hits it on Monday, completely within exactly what the definition of all this is.
I feel like people don't understand what psychotic means. I mean, I saw it right there in the comments. Not one person, not one has said she was psychotic. Not one. Okay, we say that five more times and maybe you'll feel better about yourself. But here's how this works. In the treatment, in the times that they were visiting her prior to this, she was not in a psychotic state. She just wasn't there yet. Okay, there's the answer to your question. That's why they didn't say she was in a psychotic state at that moment in time. Like, she felt, this is something, it goes in and out. It can happen for a burst and be done. They're not going to know 3 to 4 weeks in advance that she's in a psychotic state. There's a difference, and this is what Siobhan always talks about. There's a difference between someone who is a psychopath and psychosis. Two very different things. It's about as stupid as saying, well, they didn't treat that burn victim for burn injuries when they went in for the checkup 5 weeks earlier. Well, they didn't have, they weren't in the house that burned down yet. But why did they treat them for burns? Because they weren't yet a burn victim. That's how that works.
And it was very, it was established that she was in, there was elements of mania coming in here. And as Siobhan described it, mania is a stepping stone to the psychosis. I mean, but that again, we're going to find out on Monday. Hey, we'll see what the experts say on Monday when defense has their turn, or if he hits it on Tuesday. But
18 people is a lot of people to get onto the same page of this. Yep. I mean, Bob, I know, you know, body language is only one thing. You've been in a lot of courtrooms, though. You've seen a lot of people try to sell a line of bullshit to a jury. Yep. And you know it's a line of bullshit. And some really try hard. Some are just defiant and assholes like Corey Richens. Obviously, this is its own monster over here, of what we're dealing with. When you compare it to that, when you compare it to rooms where you've seen people really try to get one over on somebody or present in a way that they really want them to believe something. I don't think Lindsay Clancy gives a shit what anybody thinks of her by her reactions. Is that coming across? I mean, where do you feel the jury, or how do you feel the jury is receiving her outbursts, for lack of a better term? And I mean, I'd be outbursting too. I mean, in a situation like this, how do you think it's being received when they're shutting down court, when they're taking breaks because of it? Are they feeling empathetic? Are they feeling emotionally moved by what is going on here? And I guess it can be moved in either direction, but what's been the observation?
Yeah. You'd have to be, emotionally dead not to have feelings, and like you said, what those feelings are depend on the mindset of that person.
Yeah,
but it's impossible not to feel it in that courtroom. I mean, it's like I always say that trials are fascinating to people because we're watching the human condition in its worst possible light, and we find it fascinating.
Yeah,
you know, and we're sitting here watching this in real time with an understanding, from my perspective, that this woman was failed by everybody that she came in contact with in the healthcare system. And she realizes, she knows what she did. Like, I mean, are people under the misconception that Lindsay Clancy did not become aware of the fact that she killed her own children, the people that she loved more than anybody in the world? And that's right. Like, I need that to resonate with people. I need people to understand that she loved those three children more than any other human being on the planet. And she did this to them. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that she knows that, she knew it immediately. Like, she's been knowing it for years. Yeah. The hellscape that is her mind is worse than any prison cell that exists on the planet.
Yeah.
Where she's living at second to second, every day of her life is an absolute hell that I would not wish upon my worst enemy. And so what you're seeing with this jury is it is impactful. It's going to impact that particular jury is an individual by individual thing, because as you're seeing online, when I posted the desperately wish I could give her a hug, you know, all the torch and pitchfork, all the I don't give a shit, eye for an eye people, I don't care if she was psychotic. I mean, there is a portion of the population that in this circumstance, when a mother kills her own children, is unwilling to give them a pass no matter what the reason is. You did the act. And throwing you in jail, and we're throwing away the key.
And it's not a pass. She's not getting out of jail. That's the thing that's getting me.
What gets me is it's so much greater than this case. Nobody's trying to give Lindsay Clancy a pass. She can go away forever. I'm cool with that. But I think she's cool with that, too. It's about understanding this and recognizing this so it can be caught, can it be seen earlier? And this is one of those cases where I don't know that you really could get much. I mean, there's certainly other ways that you could have helped Lindsey Clancy, and we probably wouldn't be in this space. But psychosis, when in a condition like this, the way it did, it kicked in. Whatever triggered it, triggered it. And what happened is what happened, which can very scarily happen to almost anybody if they're in the right sort of state. And I think that scares a lot of people, and they're afraid to really go down that road and understand that. But the reason for this, this conversation, the reason that this is a big case and people are talking about it, is to prevent the next one, is to put the medical establishment on notice, to shine a light going, look at all these ways that you failed this woman, or that we could at least do things differently. If we're not going to go on the road that they failed her, that the way your system is working as directed, which is really kind of, there's not a lot in this that went really off the rails. It's just the rails are so loose and wide that it allows for this sort of a horrific way of helping someone. And we need to fix it, because this is just one case that we're hearing about. There are far more where other horrible things happen and it doesn't get a national stage for attention. This is not necessarily a huge one-off here. This is a broken system that people are living in and suffering in every single damn day. And when you see that list of the medications, I saw one of the tweets this morning about it. And this is, look at that. I mean, look at, these are the meds that she was prescribed over the course of 30 days. I mean, or three months. Any of those numbers would be insane. Well, she didn't take all of them. She took a lot of them. She took damn near almost all of them on and off. And when you're mixing these things on and off at these different levels that you get, I'm surprised she didn't do worse shit. I'm surprised she wasn't in a grocery store blowing everyone away when you're on that level of meds.
It was in her system. You know, the medical examiner tested blood. Those things, they were in the system. She was taking them.
The Commonwealth sitting there trying to put out there that she took enough of everything to know how it was making her feel.
Yeah.
Period. End of conversation. I don't give a fuck what people say about that. We like every single prescription medication, individuals react differently to it. Period. Yeah. End of conversation. There is not a baseline where everybody acts the same on this particular. Our minds are all built differently. Our biology is different, but synaptically speaking, how it's going to affect one individual. My father, day one, after they prescribed him Seroquel to help him sleep, came up the next morning and he's like, I felt like I was crazy. This is after one night, first night taking Seroquel. I couldn't tell if I was in reality. I couldn't tell if I was sleeping or if I was awake. He's like, that shit should be banned. It needs to be off the market. And, you know, when you the thing about all these scripts and throwing the polypharmaceutical cocktail at her is that none of these fucking doctors and nurses were going back to see any of the medical records from anybody that she was seeing prior to. Can you ask your patient for information and rely on that? Yes, to a certain extent. To a certain extent. You can't take it as gospel. If you have somebody that is suffering from mental illness, it is imperative, and this is proof of it.
Yeah.
That you need to do the work. You need to go back, get the medical records. You get a waiver. You get a HIPAA form that's signed by Lindsay, and she says, of course you can go get all my records. And typically in this day and age, you do it electronically. This isn't like everything that exists with this case is so confounding. And what it really is it's easy to point the finger at Tufts and say, oh, she was, 30 days after coming board certified. She was a neophyte. Where were the people behind her?
Yeah.
The system is broken because when you have a young psychiatrist coming in and she unwittingly gets a very complicated case that's exacerbated by the fact that her patient is an R&D, labor and delivery nurse, who she might be thinking, oh, and who's very A-type. Like, Lindsay keeps very detailed journals. She's a fucking nurse. She's doing research. She's asking questions. She's saying, this makes me feel this way. This makes me feel this way. And so she's, it's like, when a lawyer, yeah, when a lawyer is representing another lawyer, it's a nightmare for a client, because, you know, that lawyer is always going to have their own thoughts. Whereas with the normal client, your client is just accepting your advice at face value. When you have a lawyer that you're representing, it's a terrible relationship, because that lawyer basically wants to try their own case,
and,
but they understand
exactly,
you know, and it's the same shit that she was going through with Lindsay. Yeah. At some point, he's thinking Lindsay's just a pain in the ass. She's just throwing scripts at her. She's giving her some pamphlets about some groups that she can go and, you know, some therapy shit, group session. That's not therapy.
No.
And when you have a situation where there's not some kind of red flag or triggering event for a facility to say, okay, if you put her on seven different things, you need to step up and ask somebody with a little more more experience, or we need to round table it and collectively try to figure out what's going on with this woman. Because when they misdiagnose her and miss the fact that she had that manic episode, and I'm talking about a manic episode, a woman running a 5K 4 days after they gave birth is fucking manic.
Yeah.
And you missed it. So when they give her the Zoloft right from the get, and it has this toxic effect on her immediately, it was because they didn't look at her records. They didn't understand that in her first bout, obviously much less with Dawson, but still she had some postpartum depression issues, and she was manic. They missed that. So combing in to Callan being born, and when it starts to hit, and then they just start throwing the shit at her, it's like that message she says, I can't remember if it was Gelada or Tufts, that she sent the message, and I think it was Gelada. It rocked me to my core, and it broke this case down in one sentence. And it was, I just feel like I'm not being heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, I was ready to walk out of the courtroom and be like, you know what? I don't even think that I need to put a case on.
Bob, Siobhan hit this, our psychotherapist, on Wednesday, when she's been following this and taking voracious notes on this. And she's been appalled at on the mental health side of this as well. And her, you talked about those red flags. She said there was a glaring red flag that she saw that no one was paying attention to, and they kept dismissing it, the lack of sleep. She said that lack of sleep that she kept reporting was throwing kerosene on all these things that are going on. That was what was actually one of the escalators for this, and they weren't addressing that well enough. And especially, like you said, when you have a nurse practitioner, so she's basically charging herself with her journals and everything she's doing. I think they gave. I think Tufts started out by giving her too much deference because Tufts wasn't being backed up. I mean, you threw her. What an institution just threw her to the wolves. Hey, go make us money. We're going to put your name on the board and claim you're an expert.
And the reality is, this is the system working as it is currently laid out in its current confines. What the rules are, this is how it's allowed to operate. That's why we're talking about it, because 100%. It's broken. It goes so far beyond Lindsay Clancy. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.